check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. Hope you've had a good week. If you didn't get a chance to listen to our mailbag episode from early in the week, it was loaded with laughs, love, and plenty of good conversation, especially if you're a Georgia Bulldogs fan, and more for the Bulldogs coming up in a little bit. Hey, Barton, how are you doing?
I'm great. I am finishing up our final rankings for the class of 2020. We got another signing day coming up here pretty soon. And then one of my favorite times of the year, Chip, we get to start thinking about spring ball, thinking about optimism, what's to come, starting to dig into some of these teams, hit the road a little bit. So good, man.
In the coming weeks, and if you've been listening to any of the CBS Sports Network world of podcasts, you've probably heard the promotions. We still are going to circle back and talk about the hires, but most importantly, maybe get into some grading press conferences.
When
we get done with National Signing Day on the other side of that, sort of who won the offseason is another fun conversation that we always like to have. And of course, next week and then into the following week, Barton, your time to shine, as we'll be digging into signing day. Our listeners really dug our signing day reaction podcast, so we're going to try and circle back and give you all that good information. So a couple headlines before we knock out some of the moving pieces with the NFL draft early entry deadline that just passed, including, I think, our head coaching carousel is now calm at the FBS level. We've got, after Nick Rolovich left Hawaii to go take the Washington State job, which of course was vacant because Mike Leach went to Mississippi State, now Hawaii has a new head coach, and that new head coach is former Arizona State head coach Todd Graham. Todd Graham, of course, at Tulsa and Pitt and Arizona State, kind of a boom, 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 but at the Sun Devils, he did have some somewhat sustained success, though he did end up getting removed a little bit later in the cycle, replaced by Herm Edwards. So for Todd Graham arriving at Hawaii, the opportunity for him to sort of work his way back up, similarly to how he did on the first run, is right there. Where were you moved? Like, were you moved at all by getting to see the headset, the Britney Spears headset back in the game?
Britney Spears is back. It's funny. It's interesting that Todd's, Hawaii's going from new school guy, Nick Rolovich, to more of an old school approach, a little more in that like Bobby Petrino kind of mentality in Todd Graham. Defensive guy, go from offensive guy to a defensive guy. I'm very interested. Todd Graham has coached where? Like, he's Pitt, Tulsa, Arizona State, now Hawaii. Like, he's been geographically all over the map, literally. And I'm very interested to see if this hits. I mean, Hawaii kind of had a nice little thing going there after really struggling to find traction for a long time. I hope he can get it back going. Like, it's fun to have Hawaii being competitive. I don't know how confident I am he'll be able to, but I'll root for it.
Todd Graham is a coach, to your point, not really with the home base, and it was the point of some jokes because he moved so quickly, like Tulsa was the dream job, then Pitt was the dream job, and then Arizona State was the dream job. And then, you know, like some predictable shots fired when you mentioned dream job at several different places. I mean, it wasn't quite Eli Drinkwitz talking about winning the Sun Belt, I mean the SEC East, at his Missouri press conference, but you know, still, you know, he caught some flack for being someone who would just sort of pack up and move at the next great opportunity. So you've got, I think, if you are, and I know we've got some people that download this podcast out on the Big Island, but if you are a Hawaii football fan, you've got to be a little bit nervous that this is going to be a coach that's just going to pack up and roll. But at the same time, I'm not wary of an outsider, because even though he is a defensive coach, I also feel like we saw Todd Graham employ lots of different offensive attacks. I mean, he was the head coach who hired Mike Norvell as his offensive coordinator. So there's a little bit of a chance, I think, for whatever we think stylistically of Todd Graham, for that to be a little bit malleable and adaptable to whatever the personnel is going to fit for the Warriors.
Yeah, hired Mike Norvell, and then he hired Billy Napier after that. So pretty good track record of hiring offensive coordinators. I think if you're a Hawaii or any team of that ilk, like, I'm never scared of a coach like leaving, because if he's left, then he's left a program like that in better position than he found it, probably, or at least as good position as he found it. So hey, if Todd Graham goes career climbing again out of Hawaii, then once again, he probably left you in a decent spot. So I'm good with that. But do we have a Todd Graham press conference that's hit yet? I don't know. Did he mention dream job? I think hopefully he kind of shied away from that this time.
Oh, I really hope he did. Let's see. Todd Graham press conference. Okay. We will have to review it. He did have on the lay, as you would expect. And yes, he did have on all of the local garb. So yeah, this was we will add Todd Graham. See, Todd Graham getting this job is now to that's how we start our research on who won the press conference, who really inspired us. Now, it is worth mentioning that one of our press conference champions from last year was Manny Diaz. So winning the press conference does not necessarily indicate that you're going to be able to get it done. But, you know, I mean, listen, Todd Graham said, we're going to attack. We're going to play the game with great speed and great physicality. We're the hardest working, most disciplined, most physical, and best prepared team in the country. That's what we like to hear.
Are those actual quotes?
Yeah.
Look at you pulling those up that quick. At least you know when Todd Graham says he's going to have an aggressive attacking defense, that's not just a lie like every other coach. He is, at for better or worse, going to be aggressive in attack on defense.
No doubt. As the assistant coaching carousel continues to settle, wanted to get your thoughts on this one, because as Dave, you've mentioned a couple times leading throughout the season, you know, Dave Aranda as an interesting character within the elite level of college football. One of the highest paid coordinators, now the head coach at Baylor, taking over for Matt Rhule. And it inspired me to spend a lot of time. Like, you know, at those media days, it's like an hour, but you could sort of post up in front of, you know, one coach or something, and maybe there's not many people around. You get to ask a bunch of questions in a row. I did spend about 25 minutes in front of Aranda's little booth before the national championship game. And you're absolutely right. Loved listening to him talk. Loved listening to him take some ownership in some of the early failures of LSU's defense, diagnose what they needed to fix to get right. And I wrote about it a little bit for CBSSports.com. I can confirm, really, really interesting guy. And so, as we look forward at Dave Aranda's Baylor program, which I think is probably one of the most interesting in the Big 12, given the fact that I think he inherits a program with a really solid culture, even though he's got a lot of players to replace from, you know, senior starters that are going to be departed, he makes what I think is a very, very key move as a head coach, which is to keep Joey McGuire on board. And you mentioned Joey McGuire when we did our emergency Matt Rhule press conference, just because he was singled out by some of the players as, you know, they were even nominating him for the head coaching job, and he was the continuity piece. So Do you think that in by retaining Joey Maguire, this was a situation where Dave Aranda is going to be able to better ingratiate himself with the Baylor community?
Yeah, I think that was big, and even more so in the community, probably the team. I mean, he's just when you're like in some cases, I've talked about this, I feel like before a little bit, like when you are a program that's coming off of failure. Like you're coming off a 2-win season, back-to-back years or something, and a new coach comes in. It's pretty easy to buy in because you sucked before. So what do you have to lose to buy in? But Baylor's coming off of unprecedented success, and they got this new coach coming in, and they were such believers in Matt Rhule for good reason. So, Dave Aranda has a challenge of just getting his guys to buy in to his philosophies and process and approach. So I think it's when you have that sort of a challenge, I think it's really important to have some continuity, have a little bit of a flavor from the previous staff. And Joey Maguire, again, is and not only that, but I think it's kind of a recruiting win. I mean, that was a guy that had other opportunities at some other major competitors, and Baylor is able to keep him on board. So yeah, I think that's a nice first one for Dave Aranda, a nice first feather in the cap.
So we will be getting to on the other side of the break in just a little bit the big picture at like NFL draft early entries and sort of the programs that are going to be better off from maybe players that are coming back for their redshirt junior or senior season, players other programs that are going to have a lot to replace. And in the process of doing some assignments this week, I was digging in on Baylor, and I thought it was so interesting because the Baylor defense, you played three down linemen and things got a little bit hybrid, you know, from the linebacker, defensive back, safeties. I think on the depth chart, it technically reads as a 3-3-5 with three safeties, but the interchangeability was definitely a big part of that. And I was thinking about Dave Aranda, and I was trying to, I can't even really pinpoint Dave Aranda to a single scheme, but Baylor in particular, because they do have so many seniors, and then James Lynch, who was a junior, also left early to go to the NFL draft, it's like Dave Aranda comes in and he's got all this great culture that's in place, but it's not like he's going to have to, take a whole bunch of experienced players and bend them into a new scheme. It kind of seems like he gets to, from a personnel standpoint, again, I think the culture you got to assume is still pretty strong, especially with Maguire there. But Aranda's got kind of a free rein to mix and match as he sees fit based on whatever the personnel is going to be, just because so many of those players that had done 3 years all in the same scheme, all in the same system, playing for Phil Snow, like they're all gone, and now Aranda kind of gets to put his own little stamp on it.
Yeah, and he's a three down base guy at his core, dating back to Wisconsin, and they've mixed things up here and there at LSU, but it's just typically, I mean, I think that'll be consistent with what he'll want to do. Dave Arandis, I think is a smart guy, and so he's gonna be able to tinker with things and play with it. But ultimately, he's gonna inherit a roster of long, fast guys. That's what Baylor's been recruiting: length and speed, and just maybe not quite as polished as some of the LSU guys, but he'll have a chance to clean that up. How about how excited are you about Dave Aranda's potential replacement at defensive coordinator? You following this?
Bo Pelini?
Yeah.
Are we putting some belief that things are moving in that direction?
I mean, that seems to be the most talked about name by a long shot. It seems like he's just sort of trying to button up some things at Youngstown State to make him comfortable leaving. But look, I don't know. We're sitting here on Friday morning. Maybe I'm missing a recent report, but it seems like Bo Pelini is the lead candidate right now. That could be fun.
Yeah, sure. I mean, LSU doesn't, LSU is not Alabama in keeping its assistants on lockdown. But it ain't wide open like, Clemson makes its coordinators pretty available. But I feel like we didn't, you know, we didn't hear a lot from Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady and Dave Aranda during the season. You know,
well, I don't think any of those guys, particularly Ensminger and Aranda, are that interested in talking. But I'm not even really necessarily talking about, like, you know, media availability. I just think we're in for some. If Pelini pans out, we're just in for some, like, fun sideline antics.
Okay.
Just,
yes. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, in-game entertainment.
Just
of
unbridled fury during the game.
Pelini being a madman as of a defensive coordinator. It's like the one run that we had with Will Muschamp at Auburn. I feel like he was good for an explosive sideline tirade for, you know, like once out of every two games. I feel like we got that with Bo Pelini. But, I mean, from a coaching standpoint, that he is, like, at the highest levels of college football, Bo Pelini was an elite defensive coordinator before he became a head coach. Like, that should indicate that we should have high expectations for LSU. So that's all great, but it's been a while, man. I'm curious to see what he's like as he comes back. How he connects to the children. How about that?
He'd just be a straight just GIF bank. Just like just GIFs galore. I just saw a story from the maybe I need to check in on this. I just saw a story from the Advocate from a couple of days ago that Pelini said he's not a candidate at LSU, but I don't know. It's just maybe I'm not sure how serious this is or not, but it sure seems like a lot of buzz.
I like that there's not really any panic about, you know, replacing members on the staff or anything, just because LSU is already just kind of in this wide open honeymoon period. Like, this, how long does the LSU honeymoon period last?
I guess Louisiana folks know how to celebrate, but I feel like, you know, every other day you got parades and White House visits and
Mardi Gras coming up. I'm just assuming that Joe Burrow's going to be on a float, or at least like holding a leadership position in the Mardi Gras parade. Like, this, I really think that it might last until March, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh gosh, LSU's got to start spring practice.
Like, I feel like the championship hangover for LSU is a hurdle that very few teams are faced with after a title. Like, just the amount of partying that is thrown their way that they just have to resist is a challenge. So this is going to be beyond all the personnel and coaching turnover, just the sheer volume of Louisiana locals that want to party with them is going to make this title defense tough.
I think that they're going to be more of the reigning champions than defending champions. Might not be it's kind of tough for there to be a whole lot of defense when there's so much turnover. More on that in just a little bit. So earlier this week, headline from the recruiting trail, but not necessarily tied to this year's National Signing Day, was Georgia getting a big time commit from 5-star quarterback Brock Vandegrift. Now, Vandegrift originally was verbally committed to Oklahoma.
Yes.
And again, 2021 class, so the earliest he could sign would be later this December. He is a Georgia native, and his announcement on Twitter was very much in the "I'm staying home" kind of vein. And I am not familiar to him, but as the news started to trickle out, whether it's the always reliable Rusty Mansell or just sort of others throughout the recruiting and Georgia communities, I was like, wow, this seems like a really big get. Now, Georgia's been able to sign elite players at the quarterback position, whether it's a Jake Fromm or a Justin Fields. But of course, Justin Fields transferring out, Jake Fromm going pro. That's why Jamie Newman's going to be the quarterback next year. So with Brock Vandegrift, is this a player who, like you said with Justin Fields, can lead a team to a national championship?
So when he committed to Oklahoma, we had him ranked like 15th in the country or something like that, but maybe like the third quarterback in the country in the class of 2021. And it was really funny. The Oklahoma fan base or the message board sort of talking point was like, how can you have him the third best quarterback in this class? he was the only quarterback Lincoln Riley offered. He was number one on Lincoln Riley's board. I was like, well, you know, hey, maybe like he's really good. We like him. No. Like, you don't understand. He's the only quarterback Lincoln Riley offered. And it's like, okay, I get it. Like, Lincoln Riley is really good at this, and he knows quarterbacks. That's fine, but it doesn't just automatically mean that this is just this totally undefensible position that he's the third instead of the first best quarterback. So that's the backdrop to which the Brock Vandergriff evaluation and recruitment is based off of. Like, he has been considered one of the best quarterbacks in this class since the beginning of this cycle. He is very athletic. He is a coach's son. He doesn't play great competition, but he's incredibly productive. And he was Lincoln Riley's first choice. Backed off that pledge. He's a Georgia local. And, you know, I think this is a really big commitment for a couple reasons. One, it's a really good year in the class of 2021 at quarterback. So there's about, I don't know, 7 or 8 really elite quarterbacks. So if you're a school like Georgia and you don't get one of those guys, one of those 7 or 8, especially when one of those 7 or 8 is in your backyard, and we've seen the guys that are leaving Georgia and how much success they've had here and there, Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, et cetera, you know, they got to get that guy. And secondly, like, I'm not fully convinced, you know, obviously Jamie Newman is on that roster right now, and he's really good and should be pretty solid this year. But beyond Jamie Newman, I'm not convinced that the starting quarterback in the season of 2021 is on that roster. You know, they signed Carson Beck this year, who's a 4-star kid, but is not like a 4-star, like, just no-brainer type. And that, you know, so hey, I just think that that's really good to have a quarterback down the pipeline that you can build off of. And this is about the time, like, when you have to start getting those commits for the class of 2021. They commit a year out at the quarterback position. So now they've got – Georgia's got its guy. It's alpha for that class. So I think that's a really, really big commitment there for Kirby Smart.
So the timing – well, first of all, let me get my jokes off. Yeah, I saw Prince Avenue Christian School. I was wondering if they played 8-man there. So, yeah.
Yeah, don't judge him by who he's throwing against.
But this commitment comes right after some of the staff hires that we were praising on Monday's podcast. Are we drawing any connections there?
I'm sure that helps. And especially when, I think that helps. I don't know how much that played into it, to be honest with you, but I'm sure it was a factor. Yeah.
Because if this is a quarterback that also is interested in getting to play for Lincoln Riley in a modern offense, and, you know, you decommit from Oklahoma, you're weighing your options, you're looking around. If you are able to read the tea leaves, or if your family and your support staff is able to read the tea leaves, that the hires that are being made by Kirby Smart indicate that we might be able to chuck this ball around more. I mean, it was ridiculous that we had a real stat about how, like, Jake Fromm, and I'm going to get the specifics wrong, but it's like, wasn't Jake Fromm maybe like 1 in 7 in games where he had more than 30 pass attempts? Like, I
haven't seen that.
Yeah. It was in this South Carolina game because he threw it like 40 times in that game, and they kept bringing up the stats. Like, well, anytime that Jake Fromm's thrown it more than 30 times per game, you know, Georgia's lost. And that shouldn't be in 2020 the bait, like, the hinge point for whether your team is successful offensively.
Yeah, but I think you mentioned the new coaches. I think just to have, and I don't know, like, it's chicken or egg, I guess, but this is an athletic quarterback. This is a guy you can model sort of map out a run game around. And so is the idea of having some new blood in the offensive staff sort of encourage him that they're going to utilize my skill set? Or is just, hey, having a guy with that skill set going to enable Georgia to create a more diverse offensive scheme. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, Jamie Newman can run, obviously, so this will be the litmus test this year. What does Georgia's offense look like with Jamie Newman? But I think it is – I mean, look, Georgia, I think – certainly this year, I don't know about after this year. We'll see what the situation is, see if they get another grad transfer or what. But between Jamie Newman and Brock Vandegrift, they've got some athleticism at the quarterback position.
Coming up on the other side, some of the winners and losers at the college level from the NFL draft early entry deadline. Next.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
So the NFL early entry deadline officially passed on Monday. It's one of those times, too, when we have to break it down from the college angle, where I hesitate to go too hard on losers, but it is impossible to not acknowledge, especially at a place like LSU, that there is just massive amounts of turnover from the juniors, the draft eligible redshirt sophomores and juniors, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Justin Jefferson, Grant Delpit, Patrick Queen. I mean, we like three starters.
Kalavon Chasen.
I mean, just tons and tons of personnel departures. So, do you want to just bat back and forth on just a couple schools as case studies and sort of analyze what happened here, or how do you want to play this?
Yeah, Utah. So, yes, yeah, we can do that. I've got some winners written down.
Oh, nice.
And so, sorry for being positive. But we can talk about some losers too.
Okay. All right. Let's hit me with a good winner.
Are you ready for Oklahoma State's national championship season?
Chuba Hubbard is.
Tylan Wallace is.
I know.
Rodarius Williams is. They have pretty much everybody back on defense. They have, and this was a defense. Look, I know it wasn't like a dominant defense, but it was middle of the pack in the Big 12. I think you'll take middle of the pack with everyone coming back. And you've got Tylan Wallace, Chuba Hubbard, and your quarterback Drew Sanders all back. And this is one of the most, like, Oklahoma State is going to be a trendy team starting in now. I just got a hunch that that's good. This is gonna be a team that everyone talks now. Maybe this is a bad thing. Maybe they should go into the season under the radar. That's typically when Mike Gundy works best. But we might see like Oklahoma State buzz from December to August or whatever we're in, January to August, and that could be fun.
So Mike Gundy recently told reporters a couple updates, and he says in order to make a run at the playoff, you need to have NFL players. He said, just look at all the teams that have been in the playoff. So to have players that could have been in the NFL on the roster, that absolutely gives us a better chance. He also, to your point, he said, I thought our defense was pretty good last year. I thought that, you know, especially in this league, the way that they were able to come up with some stops and get off the field, come up big in the red zone. He seemed to almost indicate that like the offense turning the ball over probably put the defense in some bad positions at times this year and might have indicated or might have contributed to some of the, a little bit of a step back in terms of the statistical profile. Now, Tylan Wallace tore his ACL in late October, but the good news that Gundy had there is that he's ahead of schedule on rehab. Now, he's going to be protected and kind of bubbled up a little bit in spring practice, but the plan, according to Gundy, is to turn him loose come mid-August. So, it might be a slow start for Tylan Wallace, but Chuba Hubbard told Mike Gundy, "I'm ready to carry it 30 times a game. Don't limit me." Like, pulled Gundy.
Don't say that, Chuba.
Pulled Gundy aside in the hallway, because Gundy had had a quote talking about not really planning to, load up on him that way. And Chuba was like, "Nah, I'm ready. Bring it to me."
I respect that though. I like it. I like the attitude.
And Spencer Sanders, who was also injured last year, has just started.
Oh, what'd I say? Drew Sanders? Yeah, Spencer Sanders.
Drew Brown was his backup.
That's right. Yeah.
Spencer Sanders has just started throwing again. So you're absolutely right. The Oklahoma State hype machine is going to be turned all the way up, and I'm here for it because that Big 12. We talked about it at the end of bowl season. You know, we enjoyed trying to figure out who amongst the middle of the pack would come out on top of the others when Kansas State, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, you know, we're all playing each other. But come bowl season, none of them really looked great against mid-tier competition from other teams. If Oklahoma State's going to level up, you know, Texas is certainly going to have, in its mind, a big step forward after a disappointing 2019. And then we've got Baylor now trying to maintain whatever it can with Dave Aranda. Iowa State's not going anywhere. Matt Campbell knows exactly what he wants to do. So I think that we've got, again, a year where I'm going to get suckered into really being excited about the top half of the Big 12.
I love the Big 12, man. I just love the Big 12. And I've got made a fool by the Big 12's performance in bowl season. So I guess I can't get on my Big 12 as the toughest conference to win soapbox, but I could still love it. So I'm excited about this Big 12 season coming up. All right, pessimistic Perry? What's your team that took the biggest hit here?
I'm going Georgia. Because you lose Jake Fromm, DeAndre Swift, Andrew Thomas, Isaiah Wilson, and Solomon Kinley. So you're hitting reboot on the offense, which, as we've mentioned at times in this episode and earlier this week,
You mentioned Cade Mays?
Did not mention Cade Mays. Cade Mays as well.
Tennessee, yeah.
So you've got a pretty big exodus. Now, there is an upside to Georgia, too. They sort of get a little bit of a boost. I don't know if would Richard LeCount.
Yeah, you need to be careful here, Chip, because this is the year of Georgia on this pod.
Right.
So we're a positive Georgia pod this year, and you're tinkering on the edge of negativity here.
So Richard.
So reel it back in.
Richard LeCount turns down the NFL. Would he have been a high draft pick?
I think he would have been a mid-round guy, I would assume.
Okay. Richard.
But I think he could play himself into a high draft pick this year. So I think it was smart to come back.
Yeah. Richard LeCount comes back and the defense returns pretty much everybody. Like that Georgia defense, for all of the offensive turnover, the Georgia defense is going to be just as good as it was last season. And just as good means you're one of the best units in the country. So, blowing it up on offense, you lose a lot of underclassmen that chose to go, but just based on the early entry deadline, I will put them on the loser bucket.
This season to me is all about the new offensive coaches and how they use Jamie Newman, because I don't want to all due respect to Jake Fromm, but there is a world where Jamie Newman is an upgrade if they can find a way to use Jamie Newman's skill sets, all of it, effectively. I think DeAndre Swift, as talented as he is, and he may be the best running back in the draft, like they never even really fed him enough to for him to be this some sort of dominating figure in college football. I mean, they really distributed the ball around to a lot of running backs last year. So I'm not like, and they've got talented running backs returning. So I'm not worried about that. And defensively, they're going to be even better, and they're maybe the best defense in the country. So I guess really, and receiver again, it's a year two of the George Pickens era. Dominic Blaylock, year two. They got some good receivers coming in. Like that will be fine. So it's all about just with Sam Pittman gone, with those big offensive linemen gone, they've recruited so well at offensive line, but that's a big exodus. So that unit, I would imagine, will take a step back. But again, it circles back to me, to the new coaches. Like, can they put together an offense that isn't just, we're going to be bigger than you, and here we come? Like, throw a little nuance in there, use an athletic quarterback, and hey, this offense could reach, I think, heights that this past season's offense couldn't.
Can we talk about Florida State being a winner?
Yeah, they're a winner.
Marvin Wilson back. You know, it was widely assumed when his season was shut down for a hand injury that he might he would be off to the NFL. I mean, I think that Marvin Wilson's probably a first-round draft pick. And then after the hire of Mike Norvell, we get the announcement that Marvin Wilson wants to come back for his senior season. And then after Marvin Wilson announces that he's going to come back, you've got Tamarion Terry, just an absolute big play threat at wide receiver, highlight reel type player. He's going to come back. Now, they do lose Cam Akers. So, again, there's a little bit weighing on both sides of the scale. But the argument that I'll make for Florida State and Mike Norvell and why this is really good is because when you've got when you've got some of your best players coming back, that's going to be an obvious bonus. But when you've also got players that I think are going to be considered some of the leaders in the locker room, if they are committing not just to come back to Florida State, but to come back to play for Mike Norvell, well, then you've got the very beginnings of being able to lean on those players as some of the leadership in the locker room. And look, a lot of that's going to come, you know, like keeping Odell around was a no-brainer. And of course, with him being the defensive line coach, that Marvin Wilson connection, like there's a real good case to be made for like a heartbeat of the team sort of in that room situation as Norvell gets things started here in 2020. But I think that you've got those players coming back. Yes, it is awesome because they are NFL talents, but it is also great for Mike Norvell for all of the intangible reasons that their commitment might bring.
Yeah, I 100%, I think that's well said, because that was my reaction to it as well. It was less when I saw Marvin Wilson and Tamarion Terry coming back. It was less of, oh wow, look at that offense, look at that skill or talent or ability returning to this Florida State roster. It was more like, oh damn, like these guys aren't trying to get out of Dodge. Like right. they actually want to stick around and make Florida State good and dive, because like they would have gotten drafted high. Marvin Wilson may not have been a first rounder, but he would have been close. And so that's I think just an encouraging vote of confidence. And I think the thing to watch, I mean, the question there is what the quarterback position looks like. And I really think that you're probably going to see true freshman Chuba Purdy being the starter at some point. and he's not a perfect quarterback. And this is Brock Purdy's younger brother. And he is, he's got some mechanical, you know, kinks that maybe he needs to work out, but he's a big athletic guy that I think is just going to be the best option for Florida State. And so how quickly can he get going? How quickly can they pick up that Norvell stuff? But I just think there's too much talent on that roster, particularly at the skill positions, for Florida State not to be improved.
Mm-hmm. All right. Where do you want to turn the spotlight?
Well, I saw you wrote a good piece for CBS on like the top returning players or something, or maybe it's most important. I can't remember how you phrased it, but I did take exception to the order. And you had Devontae Smith maybe first. Is that right?
That's correct.
I think the most important returnee in the country is Dylan Moses.
Ah, I didn't even have Dylan Moses on the list. I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little outside out of mind. I mean, he didn't play this year.
Right.
But Dylan Moses' return at Alabama, to me, is like I believe this, that Dylan Moses hurt Alabama, like the injury of Dylan Moses hurt Alabama's national title and playoff hopes more than anything else this year. More than Tua's injury, more than the other sort of collection of injuries defensively, is Dylan Moses. I think if Dylan Moses is starting at middle linebacker all year long for Alabama, I think they probably make the playoffs. I'm not saying they beat LSU.
I don't know. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the secret weapon, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire's ability to make plays against that Alabama defense was, in my opinion, entirely a result of how Alabama was weak on the interior of its defense.
And so
with Dylan Moses, I don't think Clyde runs like that.
No. So I'm not gonna rain on LSU's many, many parades by saying Alabama would have won with Dylan Moses. but I am gonna say that was huge not having Dylan Moses. So he's back. The leadership there, the ability there, and offensively, Najee's back. Devontae Smith is back. We know Jalen Waddle's back.
Alex Leatherwood's.
And then defensively, you just have. I think that they've recruited well enough in the front seven to sort of have these guys start to come of age next year. So I think Alabama. You know, that's you're gonna have to take when you're making your national title predictions, you're gonna have to take a good hard look at Alabama, and I think Dylan Moses is the biggest reason why.
Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. I think that's
your four.
That's my three.
Oh, that sounds right.
Like for the national championship. Like when we are talking about not only make the playoff, but when we are talking about the what teams do we think can not only make the playoff but win playoff games? I think the three that just right off the top of my head, it's Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State.
Yeah, that sounds right. Other than Oklahoma State, you know.
What about Oregon?
Yep, I got them.
Yeah, we got so probably most importantly, CJ Verdell.
Yeah, but also just all of the defensive guys, and I don't know that any of them were obvious first round types, but I don't think any of them were, but they were probably a few sneaking into the early rounds with Thomas Grant and Diamador Lenore, the corners, and Jordan Scott, the defensive tackle. And there's just a lot of guys that could have left, didn't come back. Defense, I think, is going to be really stout. Offensive line will be really good again. CJ Verdell returns. That's big.
Quarterback,
right?
Yeah. I look at that defense, and with who they've got coming back, basically they only lose Troy Dye, and that's a big loss, no doubt. But, Kayvon Thibodeau was a freshman, and he was coming on as one of the best defensive linemen in the Pac-12 by the end of the season. So
yeah.
Thomas Graham, like very highly rated prospect who's played a lot of ball. I remember Thomas Graham was getting out there as a freshman in some real significant snaps. And so to have all that together, the Oregon, that'll be the another one to see who's going to be willing to go out on that limb and saddle up with Oregon. Because as Mario Cristobal and his team were watching the national championship game together, doing that same, like, this is where we want to be team activity, I was like, okay. All right, Mario, you ready to, you're in the jungle, baby. You're going to die. Let's go.
So, now I'm just curious whether is Tyler Shuck the answer at quarterback? Do they, I mean, they haven't really dipped into the portal. There was some Jamie Newman buzz with Oregon early, but that obviously tailed off. He landed at Georgia. You know, Derek King is now at Miami. KJ Costello, I guess, is still out there. Like, there's a couple of guys still out there, but what? I mean, you need a quarterback. Oregon has reached a point where they can try to play for national titles, or they can that can be a realistic goal for them. But you can't do that unless you have an elite quarterback. And so I just wonder if they think Tyler Shuck is that guy.
Would Jaren Williams entertain Oregon?
I mean, Jaren Williams isn't that guy either, though.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Like, you didn't.
I mean,
I'm not leaving Miami like with you thinking that he was some talent that Miami just couldn't hold on to. I mean, he had his moments, but I think all in all, Jaren Williams leaves fairly pedestrian.
Would you rather does Jaren Williams or Chase Bryce give you a better chance to win a conference title?
I think Chase Bryce.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the other one out there that I was wasn't thinking about that's available.
When Chase Bryce announced that he was going to enter the transfer portal, and just an outpouring of just love and anecdotes from Clemson. Oh, you've never met anybody who's like more beloved inside the program. And like,
that was a little bit of she's got a good personality to you.
It was. And then I started to reach like even further back, and I just started to say, all right, if I'm talking myself into Chase Bryce, I'm talking myself into the pedigree. Just the idea that he was a four-year starter, won state championship at a high school program in the state of Georgia. That is just isn't Grayson just like one of those programs in the state? Like, it's just a massive powerhouse. Like, 40-7 record as a starter all 4 years or something like that. I'm like, okay, all right. You can. We talk about pedigree a lot in the golf world, where it's Colin Morikawa is a young golfer right now who just played 4 years at Cal, was an All-American all 4 years, broke all kinds of individual records. And so now at the age of like 22, 23, he's in his second year as a professional, turned pro middle of last year. And everyone's like, dude, I don't know. We'll see how he does. But that kid, he's a player. And I think that's what you hang your hat on if you're excited about Chase Bryce.
Yeah, he's been. He's won some big games. I mean, he has saved the day at least in some games that, you know, weren't supposed to be big games.
We would have never had that third national championship if it weren't for you, Chase Bryce. We'll be saying thanks every single night.
So Stanford, I think, is low key an exciting one.
Paulson Adebo.
Paulson Adebo's back. Walker Little, who could have gone, probably would have been like a third round pick because he missed his senior season or whatever his junior season. But he returns as a potential first rounder at offensive tackle, and offensive line has been an issue with them because of the injuries. And they have Davis Mills at quarterback, and I think Davis Mills is going to be good. And so I was on the sell your Stanford tickets, sell your Stanford stock last year preseason. I might buy low this year. Might buy some Stanford stock a little low this year.
Because the return of Adebo and Little run counter to the transfer portal exodus in terms of narrative.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know, man. What's Stanford's recruiting class look like?
This year, like 2020?
Yeah.
It's actually pretty good. Like, there's top 25, and I think they've got some good players in it.
All right. Well, David Shaw, like, we had not seen a hiccup in the David Shaw experience. Now they've gone 4-8. Now we'll see what happens. Like, it was, somebody once described the way that Stanford looked at times this season as pre-Harbaugh bad. That's not good.
So it's not.
We'll see.
We got the one more negative one we have alluded to but haven't really touched on is LSU, right?
Yes.
Like, what do you? We'll have a lot of time to dig into what reasonable expectations should be for LSU. What are yours in the early going here?
8-4.
Wow. So that's seriously lowering your expectations.
Yeah, you got it. So let me, I'll elaborate on that. I think that you've lost so many important players at you still have a Derek Stingley. Derek Stingley is arguably the best player in that secondary in terms of just sort of like raw talent. But I mean, Grant Delpit allowed, especially a healthy Grant Delpit, allowed that whole defense to just kind of like when he could just play the Delpit position, it just really caused so many problems for offenses and made life easier for the rest of the defense. You've got so many of those like versatile second level players. Like they've got a couple of them back. Is Kerry Vincent back? I think, and he could have left, but
that's right.
Yeah, I think that the like margin for error in general in the SEC West is. How about this? I'll take them to 9-3. I think they still beat Texas, but then I think they take a couple losses in conference play.
Seems a little more reasonable. I think. I mean, this is another one where I'm just going to default and be like, you know, I think quarterback's pretty important. I'm not. I think offensive line worries me a little bit. They lose some good players in the offensive line, and you know, I think just how they've developed them is going to be how they develop the guys behind them. Obviously, determines how good they're going to be, because I just the names alone don't necessarily inspire a ton of confidence in me right now. But we don't know, so I'm a little worried about offensive line. But like offensively, otherwise. I mean, Jamar Chase, the Biletnikoff winner, is still back. You got five-star John Emery and Tyrion Davis. And, I mean, the running back field is still going to be loaded. Trey Palmer is going to step in as a sophomore next year and going to wow you. They got a five-star receiver coming in, Kayshon Boutte. They've got Terrace Marshall. Like the skill talent is still loaded. They have a five-star tight end coming in to replace Thaddeus Moss and Eric Gilbert. So none of that concerns me. Defensively, without Dave Aranda and with a lot of missing pieces there, yes, like that could be a little bit of rough going at times, but they're still – I mean, they still recruit such a high level. And they're still going to be so talented. I'm not, like, super worried. It just all boils down to, again, like Miles Brennan hasn't gotten just – Yeah, you know, Baton Rouge isn't just bubbling with confidence over Miles Brennan. So what happens at the quarterback position? Is he being undersold? Or do they have a grad transfer they can dig up? If they have a really good quarterback, who knows where they could be. But if they're average a quarterback, then, yeah, probably 9-3 is about right.
Miles Brennan running the LSU offense of 2019 – without Thaddeus Moss, Justin Jefferson, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is at least two wins short of Joe Burrow.
There's a huge difference between Joe Burrow and Miles Brennan, I think. I'm less worried about the other pieces that you mentioned that are departing. Maybe I'm putting too much stock into what a true freshman tight end could do. Or what the backup running backs can do. I have a ton of respect for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I also think those guys in year two in the system might be pretty good. So I'm not as worried about the pieces around the quarterback. I am still worried about the quarterback, and I'm a little worried about the offensive line.
Okay, let's see. Washington lost Hunter Bryant, Jacob Eason, and Salvon Ahmed. That's not good.
Yeah, but you know what? Jimmy Lake regime, fresh starts. We'll see what John Donovan can do at offensive coordinator. They have a bunch of quarterbacks to choose from in that room. It's sort of a wash for me, sort of a push.
What about Wisconsin losing Jonathan Taylor, Quintez Cephas, and Remington Trophy winner?
Just sort of, that's typical attrition, I think, right?
Jonathan Taylor might be special.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, that's no surprise that Jonathan Taylor's gone.
Right, that's true. This it wasn't a stunner.
Jonathan Taylor has had a 3-year clock on him since his first carry in college. You know, like we've budgeted that in.
Okay, that's fair. Did Clemson budget in Travis Etienne coming back for another year?
No, I mean I think we probably budgeted in a 3-year clock for him, but I don't know. You know, Clemson operates in a different clock than a lot of folks. They can get these guys to come back, so maybe they knew it all along. I'm sure he'd be gone if they won a national title.
Ooh,
I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure he'd be gone, but maybe more likely. Yeah, I think that's a big one. I think Travis Etienne coming back with Trevor Lawrence with Justin Ross is kind of scary. It's kind of scary, and with these defensive linemen that are coming in, Clemson's gonna be good, dude.
Tyler Davis was playing a lot of snaps by the end of the season. I'm ready to see him be a monster as a sophomore. Get some of those Clemson approved protein shakes in him. He'll be ready to go.
Yeah, they got some beasts coming in.
Anybody else you want to spotlight before you get out of here?
That's all. I'm clean.
All the winners. Good for you for being all positive.
Yeah.
The content machine really demands winners and losers, but Barton and Chip are just a little bit too positively charged to be able to dwell too much in the
this
losers.
This is a positive podcast, man. You know, there's too much negativity out there. We're a positive podcast.
Be the light you want to see in the world.
That's right.
Love it. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. If you want to get in on Mailbag, you do so by you going to the Cover 3 podcast. You leave a 5-star rating, a review, and also your question. It will be addressed by Barton, Tom Fornelli, and myself. Barton, thank you very much.
Sir.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.